ध्यायामोदबलावकुण्डलवतीं तेजोमयीं नैष्ठिकीं स्निग्धापाङ्गविलोकिनीं भगवतीं मन्दस्मितश्रीमुखीं वात्सल्यामृतवर्षिणीं सुमधुरं सङ्कीर्तनालापिनीं श्यामाङ्गीं मधुसिक्तसूक्तिम् अमृतानन्दात्मिकामीश्वरीम्। We are discussing the 23rd shloka of Saundarya Lahari. So Saundarya Lahari is a work written by Adi Shankaracharya. The basis of Saundarya Lahari is the Tantra system or the Shakta system. There are some minor differences between Shakta and Tantra system, but it's the Shakta system, which is also the same as Tantra. When the focus is different, then they are called different names. But it's based on the Shakta or the Tantra system. It's based on that particular philosophy or darshana, is what Shankara has written Saundarya Lahari. So the basis for one of the scriptural work for Shakta system is Lalita Sahasranama, as well as Lalita Trishati and other works which are part of Hayagriva instructing sage Agastya. But though Saundarya Lahari, like Lalita Sahasranama, is a work which might seem to be more towards Shakta system, praising a particular form of Devi, speaking about various siddhis, speaking about various activities of Devi or Mahima of Devi, Mahima and Vaibhavam, or the various glories of Devi. Yet, underlying all those glories is the basis or the basics of Vedanta, or the basis for whatever Shankara is explaining in Saundarya Lahari is Vedanta, even as the basis for Lalita Sahasranama is Vedanta. So the famous commentator Bhaskara Raya is the famous commenter of Saubhagya Bhaskaram Bhashyam on the Lalita Sahasranama. There is one of his Bhashyas as well on Saundarya Lahari also. So in Lalita Sahasranama Bhashya, in the starting itself, Bhaskara Raya differentiates Brahman or categorizes Brahman into two. He says one as Nirgunam and one as Sagunam. And he also explains the particular Nama of Mithya Jagat Adhishthana in par with what Advaita Vedanta accepts, or Brahma Satyam Jagan Mithya. So he doesn't contradict Vedanta. So that means the basis for Lalita Sahasranama is also Vedantic truth of Brahman. Similarly, the basis of Saundarya Lahari is also Brahman alone. But the shlokas might seem as if it speaks about the various glories of Devi, but beneath those glories we can find the implied meaning or the import of all those glories as helping a person in Vedantam. So wherever, like Saundarya Lahari says or Shankara says, that if a person worships Devi, then he will get these siddhis, then that means it's not about siddhis that Shankara is speaking. So at the peripheral level he is speaking about various siddhis, but underneath those siddhis Shankara is explaining some Vedantic concepts. Why do we need to harmonize Saundarya Lahari with Vedanta? Why can't we accept Saundarya Lahari as a Shakta work, like majority of Shaktas do? So if you speak to Shaktas, they'll say, oh, Lalita Sahasranama, Shankara's works, you don't need to learn Vedanta. You need to learn Lalita Sahasranama. You need to learn Saubhagya Bhaskaram Bhashyam of Bhaskara Raya. And on the contrary, if you ask or talk to Vedantins, so-called Vedantins, they'll say, oh, Lalita Sahasranama, you don't need to learn all those things. You need to learn Vedantam. You need to learn the scriptures. You need to learn the Upanishads. So both the people are at fault because they are missing the basis of all scriptures, whether it is Vedantic or Shakta. So the basis of all these works is and has to be Nirguna Parabrahman, because it is that which illumines everything. So natatra suryo bhati na chandra tarakam naima vidyudho bhanti kutoye magnihi tameva bhantam anubhati sarvam tasya bhasa sarvam idam vibhati. This is one of the famous shlokas from Mundaka Upanishad and Katha Upanishad as well. So natatra suryo bhati, there the sun doesn't shine, na chandra tarakam, nor moon or the stars, na ima vidyut ho bhanti. So and vidyut or electricity or lightning and all that doesn't shine, then kutaha ayam agnihi kutaha, then how can fire shine there? So tameva bhantam anubhati sarvam, following each and every entity in the world follows or goes behind the light of this entity. Tasya bhasa sarvam idam vibhati, and everything is luminous, everything exists because of the light of the Atman. Yadaditya gatam tejo jagad bhasayate kilam yachandramasi yachagnav tat tejo vidhimamakam. O Arjuna, yadaditya gatam tejah, that tejam which is there in Aditya, jagat bhasayate kilam, with illumines the entire world, yat chandramasi, that which is in Chandra, yat chagnav, that which is in Agni as well. Know all those lights to be my lights. So natat bhasayate suryo na shashanko na pavakah yad gatvan na nivartante tad dhama paramam mama. So all these speak about the light or luminosity as coming from just one entity, which is Swayam Prakasham, which shines of itself. So it shines by itself and it doesn't need any other light for itself to shine. So that entity is what Shastras call as Prajnanam or Chit, consciousness. And Prajnanam is what Shastras term as Brahman. So it is Brahman which is our consciousness. Brahman of the nature of consciousness which illumines everything. So it is following Chit, following the light of consciousness, that we experience objects. Objects exist. So it's not our own existence, but the existence of external entities is also dependent on consciousness. So if we don't have any consciousness, we say I was in an unconscious state. So if we are in an unconscious state, we cannot experience any entity. So the external objects cease to exist if consciousness is not there. That means consciousness is the light which illumines everything in the world. Everything exists based on consciousness. And that's why Ramana Maharshi said that Sattva Bhasika Chitkva Vetara. Sat, to illumine existence, to illumine existence of oneself, or ultimate or supreme existence of Brahman, or one's own existence of consciousness, or objective existences which are temporary. Temporary objective experiences as well. Sattva bhasika chitkva vetara, chitkva itara, itara chit itara kva, other than chit what can illumine. So there is nothing that can be illumined, or there is nothing that really exists without consciousness illumining it. That means whatever consciousness illumines is only temporary. It's only a nama rupam in consciousness. That means everything is based on consciousness. So I can say that the laptop in front of me exists because the light of consciousness which is in me falls on the laptop and makes its existence. Let's say the light is off. So the light is off, there is no light in my laptop. So what would happen? The laptop just ceases to exist. So all existence are dependent on consciousness, dependent on Brahman. But for Brahman, there will be nothing at all. So if we know that light which illumines everything, that means it is perfect, it is Purnam, it is the ultimate light. If we know that ultimate light, then we will know that everything is dependent on me. If everything is dependent on me, then why am I going behind worldly objects? So that would be the inquiry that a person does when he knows that consciousness or my nature of Brahman is what illumines the entire illusory world. So such a person will turn introvert, or he will become an introvert, he will turn inward and go towards realization of his own nature of Atman or Brahman. So it is Brahman, it is that entity, that Adviti entity which is the basis for everything, basis for duality that we see. That has to be the subject matter of any work. So any work that we take, any work which will lead us more towards the state of bliss, the state of moksha, has to be based on Brahman. So anything that doesn't speak about Brahman will not take us towards bliss. If something does not take us towards bliss, then it will not be certified. I can say that Saundarya Lahari is a very good work, but unless the work is certified by the experience of many people, we cannot say that it will give us bliss. If I have to say that Saundarya Lahari will give bliss for a person who is learning it, then many people should have experienced bliss out of Saundarya Lahari and given the certification, or like they should certify that this particular work of Saundarya Lahari will give us bliss. And since many Mahatmas have experienced bliss through Saundarya Lahari, including Kanchi Paramacharya, Chandrasekharendra Saraswati Swami, who wrote a Bhashyam on Saundarya Lahari, so that means Saundarya Lahari has to be based on Brahman. And seeing it from a different perspective, Shankara, who is a strict Vedantin, cannot speak about anything apart from Brahman. So whatever he is speaking here has to have the import in Brahman. So unless we harmonize each and every shloka of Saundarya Lahari to Brahman, we will not be able to gain bliss out of it. So we may say, oh, Saundarya Lahari speaks about this, this. If you worship, if you do this, then you'll get lot of money. So if you do this, your love will become successful. If you read this shloka, you'll get lot of powers. If you read this particular shloka and implement it, then you will attract everyone. All those things cannot give us bliss. We'll only get deluded again and again. So anything in the world, anything external, anything apart from Brahman, anything apart from realization of Brahman, anything apart from Brahma Satyam Jagan Mithya Jivo Brahma Eva Naparaha, realization, or anything not to do with this particular shloka, this particular essence of the scriptures, will not give us bliss. So if we need to get bliss, we need to interpret these shlokas in the right way by harmonizing them with Advitiya Brahman or with Vedanta in general. So we'll see as to, today we'll see the 23rd shloka and see as to how the direct meaning of the shloka doesn't speak about Brahman, how we can interpret it, how we can harmonize it with Brahman. But before that, these shlokas, each of the shlokas of Saundarya Lahari, there was an old teacher who taught my father and my father's sisters. So that lady taught them one raga, each of the shloka in a particular raga, depicting a raga. So it not only serves as a means of contemplation, a means of focusing on Brahman, but it also serves to gain devotion as well as being able to understand ragas. So a person who knows one of the shlokas of Saundarya Lahari and a raga in which it is tuned or composed, he'll be able to find ragas or various songs and related things. So this particular shloka, the 23rd shloka, is set in the raga called Athana. So this is not that popular a raga. I don't know film songs and all in the raga, nor any Carnatic song, but there is a famous song or praise of Rama. I don't know whether it's a song or whether it is any shloka about Rama, but Rama Rama Jaya Raja Ram, Rama Rama Jaya Sita Ram, Rama Rama Jaya Raja Ram, Rama Rama Jaya Sita Ram. So I don't know the exact song, and I know only bits and pieces of it, but that's supposed to be in Athana. I'm not sure about Carnatic songs. Rajesh might be able to explain or mention songs. I haven't learned Carnatic, so I don't know. And my singing would not be that good because I'm not good at singing. So it may just depict Athana to an extent, but maybe out of sync. But we are not concentrating here on either the raga or the particular or an aspect of devotion. But if we can gain devotion, if we can understand raga, then it's an added advantage. But the main focus is about contemplation of Brahman. So many of these shlokas speak about different siddhis, different forms of Devi, different particular aspects of Devi. So Devi, even like in Vedanta, where we can assume a particular form to an Ishvara in order to be able to meditate, in order to be able to focus on the form, always remembering that the formless is the reality. Similarly, Devi's form also is being praised in Saundarya Lahari as well as Lalita Sahasranama, as well as Tripura Sundari. There are various names. So different aspects of Devi's form, or we can say different forms of Devi. Devi in different forms or different or Devi being emphasized in a particular with particular qualities is being praised in each of the shlokas. So each of the shlokas speaks about different aspects of Devi and what that aspect would lead us to. When we worship Devi in that particular aspect or with that particular aspect, then what will it give us worldly, or like in the world, what would it give us worldly pleasure, what we gain out of it, as well as how it will lead us to the goal of Brahman, how will it will lead us to Sagunam, not Sagunam, sorry, Nirgunam or Nirakara Devi. So this particular shloka, in general, Shankara is speaking about Ardhanarishvara, or like Devi as taking half the form of Shiva, and he says that in reality, if we try to analyze, though we may say that, or we may find in many places that Devi has taken half the form of Shiva, but Shankara is giving in quite a different interpretation or view to it by telling that, oh Devi, I find some of your forms. So I find your form, like though you are said to be part of Shiva or half of Shiva, yet I find you complete. So there are views or there are pictures or forms in which Devi is complete. So what does that mean? So Shankara says that means that Devi can never be different from Shiva. But what that means is, you are not content with half of Shiva, and therefore you have completely occupied him. That means Shiva Shaktyaike Rupini. So you both have become one. So that's what Shankara says in this particular shloka. So the shloka goes like this. The singing might not be that good, or the raga, I may be out of raga and out of sync as well at times. Tvaya hritva vamam vapura paritriptena manada sharirardham shambhora paramapi Shanke hridamabhu yadhe tadvadrupam sakalamarunabham trinayanam kuchabhyamanam ram kutila shashi chudala makutam. So Shankara is speaking about Devi in full and then comparing it with Ardhanarishvara. So Devi is supposed to take half of Shiva. So that's why Shiva Shakti Aike Rupini. So Devi is half Shiva and half Shakti. Both go hand in hand. So if we consider Shiva as consciousness, Shakti is the power which makes activities work. So whatever way we interpret or like define Shiva and Shakti, both go together. But Shankara says, in my form, in my heart, or what form I have, O Devi, you are complete, you are not part of Shiva. And he then relates or compares it with Ardhanarishvara. So he says, yad etad, yad means what, yetad. Etad means this. So what this tvadrupam, your form. So what this, your form. So this there means in my heart, like as I see you. So O Devi, what form is in my heart? What form I contemplate, I meditate on? That your form, tvadrupam, that your rupam, sakalam arunabham. So sakalam arunabham, it is like Arunabham. Aruna means like red, or it's reddish, or like the rising sun color. So Arunabham, Arunabham, Arunabham means it's like red light glowing. Sakalam, so your form is such that it's like red light glowing from everywhere. So your entire form is completely red. It's as if some red light is coming out of you. It's like when we have sun rising, so the perfect, or the setting sun, the red color, bright red, such your form is bright red, and it throws the bright red light. It's as if a bright red light is falling upon me. And Trinayanam, and you have three eyes. So this is where Shankara relates Devi, or equates Devi with Shiva. So Shiva is generally considered to be, I think, if I am not wrong, Shiva is generally considered to be white in color. But here Shankara is saying that, O Devi, you have three eyes like Shiva, but your color is completely red. And kuchabhyam, kuchabhyam means, kucha means like breasts. So kuchabhyam, you have two breasts. And anamram, anamram means you are slightly bent. So here slightly bent, we can generally consider and see it in many ways, but generally women with a perfect figure, perfect form, will be little bit bent forward. So that's what Shankara is meaning here. So anamram. And kutila shashi chudala makutam, makutam, crown, you have a crown. Makutam means crown. And kutila shashi chudala, so shashi means chandra, so chudala, so Shashi Chudala. So that means like it's not complete moon, but it's like half moon kind of thing. So you are wearing the crown, Kutila Shashi Chudala Makutam. You are wearing the crown which has a half Shiva, not even, sorry, half Chandra, not even half. It's like 3 days or 5 days moon, as we see with Shiva. So whatever your form, yet etatvadrupam, whatever your form is there, which is completely red, bright and glowing red, and with three eyes, with some breast, two breasts, and then like bend, little bit bend, and having the crown of Chandra. So that this form, this particular form, how has this form come about? So Shankara is telling this form, Shambhoho. Shambhoho means Shivas. Shivas. Vamam Vapuhu. So Vamam Vapuhu means left part of his body. So this particular form that I have explained, that is generally said that your form. So I have this particular form, but your form is supposed to be Shambhoho Vamam Vapuhu. Taking half the form of Shiva, and Tvaya, by you, Hritva, so having taken. So Shambhoho Vamam Vapuhu, Shambhoho, Shambhu's left half, and you having taken Hritva, having taken Shambhu's left half, Aparitriptena, Triptam, Triptam means content. Aparitriptam means aparitriptena, due to being dissatisfied or being not content with that, not content with half the form of Shiva. So not content with half the form of Shiva, what have you done? Manasa, manasa, by your mind. Aparam sharirardham api. Sharirardham aparam api. Aparam sharirardham api. Sharirardham half, aparam other api also. That means being not content with one half of Shiva, the other half as well you have taken. Hridam abhut. Hridam abhut means you have taken. You have, we can say, it's kind of, you have appeased the other half of Shiva as well, being not content with one half. And Shankhe, Shankhe means I have doubt. I have doubt that, I doubt that your form, what is being generally meant or generally proclaimed as Ardhanarishvara, or taking half the form of left of Shiva, but in me I see your form as complete. So that means you, I doubt that you have, you are not content with the half of Shiva, thereby you have appeased the other part of Shiva also. So here we may think, oh, what is Shankara telling? Shankara is speaking about Devi as appeasing the other half of Shiva. That means this is against the Shiva or Shaivites. But we don't need to interpret it that way. It just means that both Shiva and Shakti are one. So both Shiva and Shakti are one. There is no difference between both. It's only in the beholding eye, like what we see, the person who is seeing, it's from his perspective. He can see it as either Shiva or Shakti, but both are one and the same. So that is the direct meaning of this shloka, that both are one and the same. Then why does Shankara speak about Devi being not satisfied? So that's where Shankara is giving the deeper impact. Oh, sorry, not impact, deeper, what word should I use? Deeper, okay, deeper significance of this particular shloka, of the particular form of Devi with respect to Vedanta. So in Vedanta, we'll never be content with worldly objects. We'll never be content unless the search for the truth becomes perfect. So Ardhanarishvara denotes a state wherein it's like a half complete state. So that means we are neither worldly nor spiritual. So we have started in the spiritual path. We cannot be termed as spiritual as well because we aren't completely spiritual. We are not worldly as well because we don't do foolish things, idiotic things that have been done by worldly people, like eating, drinking, sleeping, mating. That's the activity that animals do, and that's what majority of the people do. Unlike majority of the people who just do that activity, we are not doing that. We are learning Saundarya Lahiri. That itself means we are not that. So we are not worldly, but we are not spiritual. If we are spiritual, then we will be leaving everything, and then the 24 hours a day we will be trying to contemplate and realize. So we are in between both, and that state will never be content with anything. So we will not be content with the world, will not be content with spirituality as well, because there will be always a sense of dissatisfaction. Imperfection will be there, and in order to remove that imperfection, we need to make the spirituality, or like we need to become completely spiritual. That's what is denoted by Devi covering Shiva. So Devi as Brahman, or the thought of Brahman covering our entire mind. So we can consider Shambhu as our mind, or the world. So the world is where we live. Our mind lives in the world. Or if we can consider it either the mind or the world, because the world is a creation in the mind. The world is apprehended in the mind. But if we consider the world as Shambhu, then that means we have to pervade the world with Shakti. So if Shambhu is world, then is Shakti part of the world, half in the world? Yes, Shakti is half in the world, because we see, when we see the world, our perception of the world, we see both worldly people and people who are completely spiritual. So we see Mahatma, we see Jnanis, we see Jivan Muktas, we see temples, we see various places where Devi is completely present, 100% plus present, and we see places where Devi is not at all present. So the entire world has to be filled with Devi. How can we do that? We can fill the entire world with Devi, with the knowledge that everything is Devi alone. So Mithya Jagat Adhishthana, the knowledge or the thought that, oh Devi, everything is but you alone. Whatever is there in the world is being pervaded by you. That particular thought means whatever we see, we'll be seeing as Devi. Yadunnu kaangiladu Narayana Pratima. Yadunnu kelkiladu Narayana Srutikal. Yadunnu cheyigiladu Narayana Archanagal. Yadunnu daagiladu Narayana Ayanama. A famous poet, spiritual poet in Kerala was called Eluthachan. So he wrote the famous work called Harinama Kirtanam. So in Harinama Kirtanam, as well as he wrote the work called Jnanapana as well. So in Harinama Kirtanam, he says, Yadunnu kaangiladu Narayana Pratima. Whatever I see is Narayana's Pratima, his form. Yadunnu kelkiladu Narayana Srutigal. Whatever I hear is praise of Narayana. Yadunnu cheyigiladu Narayana Archanagal. Whatever I do is Narayana's Archana. Archana or Japa, offering to Narayana. That means, Yadunnadagiladu Narayanayanama. Whatever is there is Narayana alone. So that's what he says there. So it's a similar concept. We have to pervade Devi everywhere. So we have to see Devi everywhere. When we see that, Devi pervades the entire world. When Devi pervades the entire world, then Devi means what? It's our own consciousness, which is called Devi. The person who is doing the jiva or the seeker that we all are, we are doing the sadhana. We ourselves are Devi. And we, the Devi, the limited Devi, or the seemingly limited Devi, now seemingly limited Devi, will become perfect, will become satisfied. So So that is what this shloka denotes. So this shloka denotes a state of partly spiritual, partly worldly, or neither spiritual nor worldly, whatever we define it, a state of imperfection, a state of discontent, a state of a dissatisfied state to the satisfied state, to the realized state by worshipping Devi. So, O Devi, so when Shankara says, O Devi, you are complete in me, therefore I doubt whether you are partly. That means Shankara says, O Devi, people might think that you are partly, you have only partly occupied Shiva, but as per me, you have occupied complete Shiva because you alone are there. So Shankara is telling the Vedantic truth, the reality that, O Devi, people perceive you in different form. Some say you are taking the part of Shiva, some say you both are different. A lot of people say different views, but for me, you are everywhere. You are the only person present here. How can you say that Shankara is saying that when he is definitely speaking about the parts of Devi, he is speaking about the Rupam of Devi, he is saying Devi is bright, Devi has three eyes, this, that, Devi has breast, Devi has is slightly bent, the perfect woman. So how can he say that? So all those are just figurative, or like, we don't need to go by the direct meaning of all those. So it means that we can also, or we can, for a better interpretation, we can say Shankara is saying here that you don't need to worship formless Devi, you don't need to worship Nirguna Brahman. If you're not able to do that, then see Devi as a perfect woman. See Devi as like bright red. So bright red is something which attracts people. It's something which cannot escape the eyes of any person. So that means Devi is so attractive. So attractive means Devi will attract us. And with three eyes, three shining eyes, even two eyes, the two eyes of Devi, like in many places, Kanjalochana Namaha. So Kanjalochana. So Kanjalochana means like very beautiful eyes. So in many other places, it's spoken about as lotus eyed and all. So even two eyes are good. That means three eyes means Devi's glance just needs to fall on us and we'll be attracted towards Devi. So Devi has such an attractive form. Devi has the perfect figure. Devi is standing or sitting in front of us. Devi has such a beautiful form. Why has Devi been explained or described in detail? Why do we need to know Devi is bent? Devi is like, why do we need to know that Devi is wearing Udhyanam, necklace and all those things? Why do we need to know about Devi's breasts and other things, parts, components of the body? That's because the more deeper we go, the more we'll get attracted. And the more deeper, the more in detail we are able to concentrate on a form, our mind will be completely affixed to the form. So that's the concept of, or like it's a secret of the mind. So if we are worshipping a particular form, if we need to gain concentration, then we need to just contemplate on the form with as minute detail as possible that can be conceived in our mind. So take up a particular form and try to close your eyes and see the form in its like twists to the most minute detail. So this is what is called as like Keshadipadam and Padadikesham. So there is, Shankara himself has written a work about Vishnu, Keshadipada Stotram or something like that. So Padadikesham Keshadipadam, from head to toe, toe to head. So that's how. So the more Shankara description Shankara gives, the more our mind will be able to concentrate, and the form of woman itself means we'll be attracted towards it. So if we see a beautiful woman, not only men but women also will be attracted. So that attraction is like natural for the mind to see objects which are beautiful. So that's the nature of the mind. So when Shankara speaks about such a form, we'll get attracted to the form. And Shankara is saying here that if you cannot concentrate on the formless, then think about this form and make the form pervade the entire world. So whatever is being seen, see that as Devi's form. Once we do that, our mind will become perfect. So Shankara, going forward itself in the 27th shloka, which is a very famous shloka, which Amma uses, like Amma explains, or indirectly Amma says, when Amma says about doing meditation, she says, pray to Devi that Inde illa vakum inde vakate, all my words become your words. So let me always think about you. Wherever I walk, let it be your pradakshinam. Wherever I sleep, let it be namaskaram or samadhi for you. So that's what Shankara has beautifully explained. So this is the same thing as what karacharana kritam va kayajam karmajam va shravananayanajam va manasam va paradam. So that's what Shankara says. And here in Shiva Manasa Puja, but in Saundaralahiri itself, he says japo talpah shilpam sakalam api mudra virachana. So that's a very famous shloka in which he speaks about pranamaha samveshaha. So like sleeping is like is samadhi or your namaskaram. So when we pervade the entire world, whatever we are doing, our activities and the object that we perceive through the sense organs, through the sense organs of perception or the sense organs of action, if we pervade Devi, then we will be taken to the state of perfection. So we will become perfect. And perfection happens when we pervade Devi with the entire world. The entire world is pervaded by Devi. And that is what is signified by Shiva Shakti Aikya Rupini. Shiva Shakti Aikya Rupini. Aikyam. So Shiva and Shakti become one. So that is the form that Shankara is saying here. Shankara is saying, O Devi, people see you in Ardhanarishvara, but for me there is no distinction. I see you as Shiva alone. And his description of the form as well is Shiva's form, like the Trinayanam. Kutila Shashi Chudala Makutam and all denotes Shiva. So though this particular shloka we can interpret in normal way as Shankara worshipping Devi, as pervading Shiva, and that particular form which is Sakal Arunabham, so and so characteristics, and just stop there. We can just stop there, and a person who worships this particular form of Devi, he'll become rich. So the rich, or he'll get money, worldly prosperity he will achieve, but along with the worldly prosperity he will get sorrow as well. Ye hi samsparshaja bhoga dukkhayonaye evate adyantavanta kaunteya nateshu ramate budah. O Arjuna, ye hi samsparshaja bhogaha, whatever pleasures you or any person can achieve by sense contact, by sense organs coming in contact with sense objects, dukkayonaya eva te, te dukkayonaya eva, they are seeds of sorrow. Why are they seeds of sorrow? Adyantavanta kaunteya, o kaunteya adyantavanta, they have a beginning and an end. Therefore, nateshu ramate buddhaha, therefore wise people don't take resort to them. So worldly pressure we will be getting by chanting all these shlokas. So even Amma says Lalita Sahasranama, a person who chants Lalita Sahasranama, he will not be in lack of money or food or clothes and all. He will be getting all those things, but it's up to us whether we want to go one step further to realization, to moksha, to becoming completely perfect. So perfection, satisfaction, contentment, happiness, all those are synonyms. They just are different words for moksha, different words to denote the state of moksha. If we want moksha, then we have to take the deeper meaning of Saundaralahari. So any work, any devotional work can be just taken as a devotional work and meant for just getting devotion to the particular form. But we can go one step further and merge that particular devotional work with knowledge. So bring in knowledge to the devotional work, then it will not only serve as a means or as means of gaining more and more devotion, but it will directly take us to moksha. So if we are able to chant this particular shloka by heart and chant this shloka, remembering that Devi pervades Shiva even as Brahman pervades the entire world. O Devi, I'll contemplate in your form. I'll pervade the entire world with you. And once I pervade that, you will become perfect. What is the use of you being perfect? I am you. So since I am part of you, I am you, therefore I'll also become perfect. So that is what is being indirectly implied in this particular shloka. So it's not possible to argue with a person and say that, okay, Saundar Lahari speaks about Vedanta, because this indirect meaning cannot be found at a glance. Or like if we just go by verbal meaning or the Sanskrit word meaning of the shloka or the various commentaries or explanation, we will not be able to harmonize it with Vedanta. If we need to harmonize it with Vedanta, we need to know that everything has to get related to Brahman. And for that, we cannot argue. Or like if somebody comes and says, oh, Saundarya Lahari is a Shaktava, we cannot say anything. The best thing to do is just keep quiet. You have your view, I have my view. And a person who just goes by word meaning, person who goes by the direct meaning of Saundarya Lahari, not equating or relating it with Vedanta, not relating it to Advaitiya Brahman, he will not be able to gain bliss. Such a person will finally start arguing. He'll start saying, Saundarya Lahari, Shankara himself had to renounce Vedanta and write about Devi. Shankara, who is supposed to be Nirguna Upasaka, a person who used to do Nirguna Upasana, he himself had to take a form. Why? Because Devi cursed him. So at the end of his life, Shankara was struggling, therefore he had to write Saundarya Lahari. This is like one of the Vaishnava once arguing with me and saying that Shankara's life history itself has an incident which says that Vishnu, the form of Vishnu, is supreme, and Shankara himself had to accept it. So the story, like the person, the Vaishnava, that old person, he is like retired and maybe 60s, that person started arguing, and he started telling Shankara, when Shankara's guru asked him to write a commentary, so Shankara chose the Lalita Sahasranama. So Shankara chose the Lalita Sahasranama, and Shankara told one of his disciples to bring Lalita Sahasranama. And when the person went to bring Lalita Sahasranama, then Ashariri voice came, which said, not Lalita Sahasranama, Vishnu Sahasranama. And thereby Shankara wrote the commentary to Vishnu Sahasranama. So this shows that Vishnu is greater. This shows the importance of Vishnu Sahasranama. Such people are foolish people who argue that way. We have the Shankara's Bhashya on Lalita Trishadi, which is a most secretive work. And if we read the commentary of Shankara on Lalita, Vishnu Sahasranama itself, we'll find that he is equating it Vishnu with Brahman. Vishvam Vishnur Vashat Karo. So Vishvam Vishnuhu. So that too, Vishvam. Vishvam means the entire world is Vishnu. Entire world is Brahman. If entire world is Brahman, then how can we limit him to a form? So that's the importance of that. That's the way form worship takes us to. The moment we pervade the form to the entire world, it slowly becomes formless. So that which pervades the world cannot be a form, because form is limited to space. When we pervade form in the entire space that is available, then it becomes formless. So that is the way to worship a particular form. When we are worshipping a form, we should see that form everywhere. And that is indirectly explained, Sarva Bhutastam Atmanam Sarva Bhutani Shatmati Yasmin Sarvani Bhutani Atmanyevana Pashyati Sarvabhuteshu Chatmanam Tatona Vijugupsate. Ishavasi Upanishad and Gita as well says, when a person sees the self in all and all in the self, Vyashti in Samashti and Samashti in Vyashti. If you want to like learn more about it, like you can go through the Ishavasi Upanishad seven shloka, sixth and seventh shloka, which is in the side, there is a commentary, English commentary, or any other translations. So there it is said, when a person sees the self in all and all in the self, such a person is a yogi. He will not be affected at all. He will not have any hatred at all. He will be devoid of ragadvesham. He will be devoid of bhedam. That means he will become realized. And that is what is to be achieved through a particular form. So we have to contemplate on the form, meditate on the form, and make the form pervade the entire world. So when the form pervades the entire world, it becomes formless. When Vishnu is praised as Vishwam, when Vishnu is praised as Vishwam, that very moment he becomes formless. So that means Shankara is praising Nirguna Brahman. And so those are people who just want to argue for argument's sake. We just have to ignore it. So does Saundaralehari speak about Vedanta? Is Shankara speaking about Shakta system or worshipping various forms of Devi or gaining various siddhis in the Shakta system? Or he is speaking about Vedanta? We should, if somebody asks our opinion, we should say, I know that Saundaralehari speaks about Brahman, because Shankara has written it. And to each and every shloka of Saundaralehari, we'll be able to harmonize with Vedanta, with views of Vedanta. That means Saundaralehari stands for Vedanta. So we may have learned Saundaralehari, we may be learning Saundaralehari, we will find many books and commentaries, but we should know how to harmonize it with Vedanta. So that is what is really important, because unless we bring in Advitiya Brahman, unless we bring in Brahma Satyam Jagan Mithya Jivo Brahmeva Naparaha, or any ways to achieve that realization, we will not really benefit out of Saundaralehari. So Saundaralehari, really real benefit comes when we identify that Devi as Brahman and go on to realize Brahman through the sadhana, through worship of the various forms of Devi, or whichever suits us, whichever is appealing to our mind, whichever our mind is attracted to. That is the real purpose of Saundaralehari. And at the end of Saundaralehari itself, Shankara speaks about Devi, or saying that Devi's walk, I have used your words and praised you itself. So that is the level of bhakti, level of surrender that Shankara himself had. And that is also an indirect way of telling that, O Devi, everything is but you. So I have used you to explain you. I who am you have used your words to explain you in order to realize you. So that is what is the spiritual path in short. So we forget, we don't realize, we don't remember our own nature of Brahman, we have forgotten it. Therefore we need to take a particular form so that we can concentrate, take a particular form, meditate on the particular form, gain concentration on the form, and pervade the form to the entire world with surrender and the knowledge that this form is only an illusion. This illusory form is being used by me in order to gain concentration. If we do that, then we will not only get worldly pleasures, if we remember that in order to become perfect, in order to become complete, I need to see Devi as pervading the entire world. I'll take the form of Devi, beautiful form of Devi, and make it pervade the entire world, and thereby I'll try to realize Brahman. If we do that, then we will get worldly pleasures as well as we will gain Anandam. After gaining Anandam, the entire worldly pleasures is not worthy of even speaking about. So worldly pleasures will still be coming, will not be attached to it, will not want it, but it will still come because of the grace of Devi. So let Devi bless us all, so that like we can contemplate on this particular shloka and gain not only worldly pleasure or the richness of the world, but the richness of the Atman, which is eternal bliss. We'll continue the next shloka in the next day. Hari Om.